Hi, and welcome to February's Creating Customer Value podcast. I'm Amanda Malagiri, Assistant Editor for Search CRM. This month, our podcast focuses on the link between customer trust and the customer experience. Dom Peppers has joined us to answer four questions on the topic from Search CRM readers.
Hi, this is Dom Peppers. Question. I work for a car dealership and get paid on commission. Our customers know this, and it can be very difficult to gain a customer's trust, since they know we want to make a sale. Can you offer any tips for improving the customer experience in order to build customer trust in this situation? Well, yeah. We've always felt that car sales commissions are antithetical to customer trust. Our first recommendation would be to car dealerships to change the sales compensation structure so that salespeople are paid not just a one-time transaction-based commission, but a more long-term relationship-based commission. For instance, rather than paying, say, a $500 commission for moving a particular car off the lot, what if the dealership were to pay you $300 for selling the car, but then assign the customer to you so that every time this new customer came into your dealership and spent any money at all, including not just a second car or a replacement for the one you sold, but also every services. Every time that happens, your pay would be credited with, say, 3% of the revenue. That would give you a lifetime interest in the customer's lifetime value. This kind of compensation structure is more aligned with the kind of objectives that we suggest should motivate companies and salespeople to build long-term, trust-based relationships with customers. However, let's just work with what you can do personally, given that you are trapped in the sales compensation scheme offered by your dealership, and then you cannot by yourself change that scheme. Well, first, remember that there are two dimensions to trust. A customer will trust you only if, one, they believe you intend to help them, that is, to act in their interest, and two, they believe that you are competent to act in this manner. Both these conditions have to be true. You have to have the desire to do the right thing for the customer and the capability to do it. So don't lose sight of the details that will convince a customer of your capabilities, such as reasonable prices, product quality, being on time, having a clean and neat office, and organizing and explaining the test drives, the walkthroughs, and the paperwork. All those factors are important in improving the trust that a customer has in you. But assuming that you can prove your capability and competence, are there some trust-inspiring actions you can take that might persuade the customer you are, quote, on their side in the negotiation and transaction? Here are a few ideas. First, of course, listen carefully to better understand a particular customer's perspective, ambitions, fears, anxieties, and needs. Listening is not always easy. It's not a natural talent for us sales-oriented types. And I know it's always been a growing edge for me. Personally, I constantly have to work overtly and consciously to force myself to try to be a constructive, active listener. And good listening does not mean leaping to conclusions. It means trying to put yourself honestly in the customer's own head in order to understand what it feels like to be that customer. It means crossing the street in order to have your own world, leave your own world behind and experience the world that this particular person experiences. Second, solve the customer's problem from the customer's point of view. If you listen carefully enough, you'll begin to see how the customer views the problem and what the issues are from the customer's perspective. Solving the problem or meeting the customer's need, however you want to conceptualize this process, may or may not involve your brand of car or your own car dealership. If you don't honestly believe your car is the best possible way to meet the customer's need, then don't pretend it is, just to make the sale. Remember, you live in your car brand's world, but your customer doesn't. Your customer lives in the real world with all sorts of other brands and products available. You need to inhabit that other world. And third, always be scrupulously honest with the customer. Yes, selling involves persuasion, and persuasion often involves some kind of spin to put on a product feature or a benefit or a cost. But there's a difference between putting your product in the best light and deceiving a customer, even by omission. Again, if you can't honestly aver that your product is best for a customer, then don't pretend to be trying to earn the customer's trust at all. Question: what are the key criteria that make for a great customer experience, and how do these things impact customer trust? A great customer experience will be different for different customers. One customer's warm feeling about being remembered will likely be another customer's vague feeling of having their privacy invaded. So the first criterion for a great customer experience is that it is one designed for an individual based on the company's knowledge about what that particular individual prefers. Now, this might be an insight driven solely by the fact that a customer is a member of some particular segment or subsegment. Or it might be driven by a more specific memory of a customer's previous settings. Or it could be the result of accommodating an experience to the customer's own wishes as expressed in a profile. But regardless of how the customer insight about this particular customer's preference is obtained and evaluated, every experience is individual. So the firm's actions need to be designed to create great individual experiences as much as possible. It's important when you think about your customer's experiences to ensure that your own organization, which is most likely organized and evaluated by product line, doesn't get in your way. Customers don't care about product or service lines, channels, or silos. They just want to have their needs met or their problems solved. And your firm might help them do that, or it might not. So you should mystery shop your own company to see what it really feels like to be a customer and to ensure that your own organizational imperatives don't confound your efforts to deliver great service. Another criterion driving a great customer experience has to do with expectations. Even the world's best customer experience can be undermined if the customer actually expected something better. Well, why would this happen? Sometimes it happens because, as marketers, we are often tempted to trumpet our plans for service enhancements and improvements in advance of actually implementing them. We put plans into development to significantly improve the user interface, or service at the call center, or the training of our point-of-sale personnel, and we announce those plans publicly in an effort to improve the public perception of our brand. We may even put these plans in our advertisements. The problem this creates is that our customers now expect much better service, and if the service has not improved as substantially as they were imagining it would, based on our very clever and chirpy ads, then they will actually be disappointed. So manage your customers' expectations very carefully. Question: in general, if a loyal customer has one bad experience with the company, how much does this impact their level of trust? In your opinion, how forgiving are customers these days? Well, customers who really trust you can be incredibly forgiving. After all, it isn't easy to find a trustworthy company to buy from. But they're only going to forgive you when it comes to honest mistakes, not deception. Everyone makes mistakes, and customers can forgive a glitch or two in your processes, but they won't remain loyal to you if they detect that they've been deceived in some way, or if they think you've been less than honest with them in fixing the problem. JetBlue's Valentine's Day ice storm in 2007 is a great case in point. The carrier canceled more than 1,000 flights over a holiday weekend and generated tremendous ill will among its customers and prospective customers. But it quickly took corrective measures. It implemented voluntarily a customer bill of rights, entitling customers to specific levels of compensation whenever any designated inconvenience happened in the future. And it soon had restored the trust of its customers to previous levels, maybe even better than previous levels. There's an entire chapter on the topic of recovering lost trust in our book, Rules to Break and Laws to Follow. Question: I'm looking for more information on the chief customer officer position to bring to a meeting with company executives. What are your thoughts on this position, and do you have any examples of companies that have hired chief customer officers and seen improvements to the customer experience, customer loyalty, and customer trust? A colleague of ours, Jean Bliss, has written an excellent book, Chief Customer Officer, Getting Past Lip Service to Passionate Service. And we highly recommend that you get a copy of this book and read it. One thing Jean says in the book, and we agree, is that naming the CCO in a company is not likely to make much difference unless the whole leadership team embraces the effort to put customer centricity into the organization. It's a good idea, generally, to put someone in charge of ensuring that your company focuses on customers, and focusing on customers is probably the central mission of any chief customer officer. But beyond the words, what does this really mean? For instance, what actual authority would your CCO have? Will he or she have line authority for advertising and marketing, sales, sales compensation, service and warranty policies, call centers, product pricing, credit authorizations, store layouts, employee training? You see the problem. How a firm treats customers is at the core of the very existence of the firm. Customers define what it means to be a company in the first place. Everything a company does has some impact on customers. Now, at some firms, the chief customer officer is a glorified cheerleader with little line authority beyond a small staff. This doesn't mean the position is totally useless, because even cheerleaders can have an impact by surveying and reporting on customer satisfaction, by communicating best practices to line managers, by carrying the torch. At other firms, the chief customer officer has a much broader mandate, sometimes responsible for marketing and sales, two functions that are increasingly intertwined in the modern company. But where the CCO sits and how much authority he or she has are issues that don't matter nearly as much as the question of whether a company's other executives and managers are fully engaged with the idea of customer centricity.
That's the end of our podcast. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us next month when Martha Rogers reveals tips for using technology to optimize the online customer experience. Until then, I'm Amanda Malagiri for Search CRM.